Okay, what I'd like to do is turn the mic to Jackie. You have been with Ultra Red for many years, a supporter and a inspiration, something of a spiritual advisor for us as well. Yes. And you've given a lot of thought to some of the things that we've talked about today. And I would really ask if you could offer some thoughts and maybe a whole other set of questions that you would like to introduce to the room.
Spiritual advisor, that's pretty tough. Well, it's late in the day. There's hardly any air in this room. So I don't know so much if I have questions, but I want to make some comments. Thank you for, first of all, bringing us all together here. Comments go back to actually the opening question, which I wrote down as, or it wasn't a question, it was a statement that Don said, are we at war? I guess that is a question, isn't it? I mean, you could put a question mark there. And I want to make the comment and tie it back to the whole question of borders. Because I find it interesting that in talking about erasing borders, in some ways the conversation, at least in the questions, almost set up borders. I mean, the conversation went back and forth between borders and borderless. Is there a difference between the artist and the organizer? What's the difference between being engaged, and one could add being committed? Is there a border between the people who have AIDS and the people who don't? Is there a border between those of us who are men, those of us are women, those of us who are transsexual or whatever? Are there racial, ethnic borders? And how do we break any of those down if we don't believe in borders? And in some ways, it's tied closely to what I supposedly teach, which is urban planning, which considers it an interdisciplinary field, but which sets up rather immense borders. So people study housing, or they study transportation, or they study the environment, and they don't see the linkages between the two, or it's very hard. So let's go back to this question, are we at war? And I'd like to re-ask it or put it in a different frame, which is everything that's war bad? And is everything that's war about violence? And I would suggest that the violence part is what is bad, but that war itself, as Leonardo said earlier, or maybe he didn't mean it globally, but I agree with his saying that Boyle Heights has been at war. And I think we are at war constantly. There are certain rituals of war that don't apply. We expect war to be about killing, about getting rid of the other, about the use of armed force, if you will, and of erasing, making sure that nothing is standing. I think we know less about the rituals of acquiring power, and I think that the struggles that we sometimes have is that, especially in the United States, we've not gone above a certain limit of acquiring power, so that 500,000 to 1 million people marching is power. Getting the housing authority to stop dislocating people and displacing them is power. But do we ever think about what it would be like if, in fact, capitalism was defeated, if Bush and his ilk were out of power? How would we govern? How would we reduce the kinds of conflicts? How would we make the world one without borders? And in that respect, where does art fit? And can art help lead us? There was a comment that Walt made earlier about art helping provide a vision, and I think that's absolutely true. And I think that we lose our sense of what is a vision and what isn't. So I would go back and break down the walls, break down the borders, break down the artificiality between who sees themselves as an artist and who sees themselves as an organizer. I mean, my sense of who's in this room is that there's a certain level of discussion and discourse and language that we all know. So our discussion here in relation to art or organizing is not so much about divisions between any of us here, but between us and LACMA, us and the Guggenheim, right? And that we need to get clearer about who we see as having power and how we can appropriate that and how we can use one campaign after another in a way that's not laid out the way a plan would be laid out, but that allows people to gain leverage and use whatever we can in order to be able to gain that leverage. So that's my spiritual words. To let some people in the room know about some things that are happening that I think have are an attempt to move in this direction. One is people from the Southern California Center for, which I never remember the name, the Library for Social Research, who are gonna have an exhibit on housing and the right to housing in May and April, and they have flyers to hand out. And what's important about it, I think, is that for one of the first times, what they've incorporated is the ideology, the value system behind what is happening in housing and development. So it's not just an exhibit of what might look good or might only fit into an aesthetic. It's a political as well as about shelter and housing as shelter. Second is a class that Ava has been involved in that's going to start at UCLA, which is called Revolutionary Planning, and where the students are looking at the ways in which, what that means, and will tell us at the end of the quarter, of course, because that's when we'll make the revolution, right? There's also the space that Don and Elizabeth and Leonardo have been involved in the Community Scholars, which brings activists and organizers together in with students, and where the subject next year is going to be the right to the city. I say all of that as ways to throw out the fact that each of us knows of something that is happening, and the ability for us to learn about what each other is doing helps us to create the linkages. And that's why I think it's really important that what you've done here is not just a start, but a process of linking.
I just wanted to like echo a couple things that Jackie said too, that I was thinking about at the opening of the discussion, and about not making unnecessary distinctions at certain points between making necessary distinctions but not unnecessary distinctions between the work of artists, of activists, and of organizers, and that there's probably at least I think levels of complexity in crossing over whether you're talking about short-term projects or long-term projects. Like, we're all kind of engaged in this long-term project, this, like, this struggle against the way that capitalism defines our social relations or how we get to use our time. But then that all these little struggles are really important, and we're all engaged in them, and we may work as an artist or an organizer in a short-term project, but then switch, you know, when it comes to this larger picture of the struggles that we're kind of, that all of these small projects are connected to. And with that too, that one thing that comes up again and again listening to what you guys are saying today is that there's also this necessity not just for struggling against things, but also for this vision and for building something up that is based on the world we'd like to live in and see. And so that's, yeah, that's all I'm gonna say.
I just wanted to make a comment. Jackie, I loved your comments. They were very insightful. And I especially liked what you were saying in terms of the rituals of acquiring power. And as you were talking about that, I was thinking about how we use different organizing tactics to build power and how we use art as another way of building power. Art in a certain level, or how I'm seeing it in our organizing, is like this little weapon that we have in trying to build power as we're in this war. And I just really appreciated what you were saying.
I just wanted to make a quick comment about the... Hi! So, the creative act as a site of pleasure and our recent experiences. I had the opportunity to sit in on a group critique of the installation that Don's doing as part of his thesis at UCLA, his master's thesis, and someone spoke to us after the critique and said, you know, as an artist, I don't know if I could handle working with such a heavy issue like HIV/AIDS. How do you do that? How do you work with like such somber subject? And he had spoken to Don separately, and he spoke to me, and we both had the same response, which is basically, there's so much levity that's involved in dealing with this situation that we gain tremendous pleasure from the act of dealing with, just from what it takes to deal with certain issues of an installation. You know, why should this be included? Why should that be included? The whole questioning process and the humor that comes out of those discussions, and you know, we definitely have a lot of anxiety about, we don't want to put elements in that we don't understand or we don't know why they're there or what. And so just overcome, you know, just this act of creativity and all the issues that come from that. And as far as just pleasure in general as a driving force for creativity, one of my favorite writings of all times, it's a constant source of inspiration, is The Myth of Sisyphus by Camus. And maybe I've grossly misunderstood it over time, but I consider the most important philosophical question there is, how do you realize life is nothing but constant struggle, and there's no God, and how do you not kill yourself as a, you know, when you arrive at that point, that understanding? And because the struggle is unavoidable in life, so is pleasure unavoidable. I mean, there's, you know, this, it's hard to not just go, whoa, those trees are beautiful, or that, you know, this is, oh, I feel so good right now because I just ate, or, you know, the pleasure is just, it just happens. And, you know, dealing with struggle and coming to terms with struggle of life on a daily basis, or people's struggles, or, you know, whatever comes up, when you deal with that, and pleasure is inevitable in that process, I think. When you're living, I mean, if you give up, if you commit, you know, philosophical suicide and just go to work every day and come home and cook and go to sleep and don't really feel like you're challenging yourself in any way, or you're doing anything that is just challenging, or that you feel like you're being progressive. I mean, people can have families and engage in, you know, whatever, what seems like a banal life, but to them is very rewarding. And so if you're not seeking out those rewards, if you are just, I don't know, that's, if you're not seeking out those rewards, and then you're not experiencing that pleasure. And for me, being creative is, that's where I gain that pleasure, and not, you know, just being engaged in conversation and moving through issues is, it's a driving force. And I mean, a long, when I first went, you know, left high school and was talking about being an artist, a constant discussion between a friend of mine and myself was that the act of creating is it's a fire that you can only put out with more fire. You can only, you know, that burn to do something, that drive to do something, you can only do it, you know, you can only appease it by just doing it and doing more of it and doing more of it. And that low that comes from not working on a project is only solved by starting that fire back up again. So, and I think, you know, definitely this is the same with organizing. It's an act of creativity, so that's definitely the common ground.
And there's also the discussion about utilizing tools for power. I think that pleasure is definitely one of those things that you find that is powerful. You'll find people who are often in some of the worst situations in life, they sometimes will come up with the most amazing art that you've ever seen. And that's probably far more powerful. You know, it's kind of a slap in the face to the people that are against them that communities are able to sort of come up with these sources of pleasure when they're dealing with really, really heavy stuff, you know? So.
Hello. I think one of the ways I was thinking about this is, since we're talking about pleasure again, one of the things this is making me think about is not so much pleasure in terms of doing something that you derive pleasure from as in terms of a sensation of pleasure or something like that, but pleasure in terms of something that that moves you, right? Something that physically or intellectually moves you, or that somehow comes from a space of play. I don't know if that's the word we're still supposed to be using, but in terms of that, it made me think of one of the ways that I find interesting to think about an artwork or an aesthetic project in relation to an activist project, for example, or one of the ways that we might see them both as aesthetic projects in some kind of way, is related to this idea of that Greg Bordowitz was talking about in terms of the refusal to act in full competency, right? And one of the things I think that Greg is drawing on is this kind of psychoanalytic idea of the incompleteness of the subject, right? Where these kind of the kind of form of a subjectivity that you're given is bound up with power and everything, and of course you are never going to be exactly that, and there's a source of power in that somehow, in that incompleteness. And in the same way that I think of the incompleteness that is necessarily a part of failure, right? Like if you have taking advantage of the failure or what is not completable in a task that is given to you from the outside. I think that in a lot of organizing, I mean, in the prison movement, anti-prison movement, there's a lot of debate around sort of short-term goal-oriented organizing versus long-term, you know, organizing. And the short-term goal organizing would be, we're going to stop this prison from being built, we're going to get these many people out of prison, we're going to change this kind of law in the immediate sense. Long-term would be somehow working toward the kind of society that we envision where we don't have people locked up in cages. That'd be a more long-term vision, which, you know, you can't really think about in terms of, like, competency or completeness. And I think that, for me, pleasure would be that those, not failure in the negative sense, but failure as a sort of lack of full completeness that comes after a short-term goal in terms of activism has been attempted, you know, and then pleasure is what links you to the next, is what links you to the next goal, but also isn't either of those goals, right? It's the texture of life, of community, of what you're making in the process, and I think one of the things that thinking about art in relation to activism is bringing up the imperative of culture in relation to that, and not just thinking about it as a series of rational actions that are tasks, that are burdens, that we're like chores that we accomplish, but are bound up in the making of stuff. And I think, I mean, we've all been getting at that a little bit. But I think of the idea of what generally makes an aesthetic object interesting or an aesthetic project interesting is that lack of a full completeness, where that's the space that the viewer has to enter it and be active. Just like we're talking about a person entering into a campaign or into a community development trajectory where they can be active, I don't think it's so different. And I think it's just like a different register, or it's a different way of pulling those things together. So I think it was mainly those thinking of the aesthetic object in relation to a goal or something like that could be keeping them open rather than closed and dogmatic. That's what I was thinking of.
Okay. Hi. Again, I'm feeling sort of like I'm piggybacking on what you've said and what Eddie said and what you said as well about the use of art for goals, but also incompleteness as well. I mean, one of the most inspirational books that influenced me as an activist was The Dispossessed, An Ambiguous Utopia by Ursula K. Le Guin. And in this book, we're dealing with an anarchist society that the government no longer exists. There's no longer capitalism. But there's still all these relationships of power that haven't necessarily been dealt with properly, that there are still many elements of society that are very oppressive. And, you know, I both found this really useful because, well, here's a blueprint of what something might be like in the future. This is one possibility of what people eventually are working on. Many activists have talked about that, you know, keeping people involved, not just for individual actions, but for a campaign, is very difficult. That once you get, you know, okay, you were going to do this, we're going to get better health care in this sector. Okay, we did that. Well, what happens now? Some people will just drop off. Other people will be involved for a long period. Well, we need to find a cure for HIV. We need to get universal health care, these longer term goals. And I found books like this and artwork like this, which envision a new alternative to be useful for sort of, well, for the long haul, so to speak. But also, I found the incompleteness that this is never going to end, that there is no end date that we're looking for, that there's simply a continuous struggle, you know, relating to the myth of Sisyphus, relating to incompleteness of individuals and groups and so forth, to be extremely useful in relating art to activism.
Thinking about all this type of work of late, I've been thinking about the moment after trauma, sort of like someone came along and, you know, emptied your toy box and everybody stepped on it and it's all broken and now you got to put it back together. But there's the possibility that it all fits back together differently in a way that you can't imagine it right now. And so part of what I was talking about when I was talking to Emily was this idea of some expectation of what protest is going to look like or what resistance is going to look like or even what activism is going to look like. And that sort of relates to what people are talking about now, this sort of open moment that happens in the creative process. And I've been reading this. I'm just making all these little intuitive leaps. It's the way I think. I've been reading Brian Massumi, an interview with Brian Massumi, a philosopher in Montreal. And he talks about hope as being disconnected from an imagined idea of utopia or optimism. And posits it back on the present as a moment of open potential. And all the potentialities that are available to you in the next step. And that's sort of the point that I see all of this work working in activism, and that it's not going to look like any kind of movement that we've seen in the past, any kind of activism that we've seen in the past. And that's what I love about the conjunction of arts and activism, whether it's utilized as a specific tool of organizing or reflection, and to a particular community, or if it's aligned or alliance related. I mean, if that's the way the work works. So that's what I've been thinking about and keeps floating in my mind.
Well, I just wanted to say that it's really a wonderful experience to sit in a room and have people actually talking about art practice producing models for transforming the world from a capitalist world to some other world. It's so wonderful. And I think in the discussion of pleasure, what keeps coming up for me is the idea not so much of pleasure per se, but of the relationship between aesthetics and ethics, and the question of how should we live, being a question that's posed both by aesthetics and ethics, and the, you know, historically the close relationship between both aesthetics and ethics as a way to engage in the development of the individual. And I really appreciate what Jackie had to say about the argument being more an argument with, like, LACMA and all the Guggenheim and all of the other kinds of institutions, which don't make a connection normally, I think, between aesthetics and ethics, but use aesthetics in a sort of rarefied form. And maybe this folds back into the argument that I was posing earlier that we were not making, which was that, you know, art practice has a moral imperative or something like that. So I just thought I'd throw that out in terms of thinking about this question of whether art practice can pose new models for the transformation of society. I don't know how anybody could answer that, but I think it's a great discussion and moment to have actually people saying with a straight face, you know, let's look for a transformation now. Not maybe there's a role for incompleteness, obviously, in that. And of course, I'm like Ashley, engaged in this prison abolition movement, which, you know, seems like a utopian imaginary. And Frederick Jameson just published an essay about utopia, a kind of interesting in the New Left Review. And I don't know if anybody's read that, but I'm proposing the utopian imaginary be kind of reincorporated into this question of how should we live, that is both the dual question of ethics and aesthetics.
It seems like through a lot of, we're all like following threads now and like starting to, like, you know, weave a new thing, which is like, I don't know, I read something where actually the word like textus, text is actually, its roots are in weaving. I just love that. But it seems like I sort of want to bring it back to this other level, which is that, which is this idea of sort of action or the coalition, which Ultra Red is a really productive coalition of this very question that you sort of ask about organizing and working beyond single identification issues, you know? And it seems to like bring up what Ashley was saying and what everybody is mentioning is, like, to me, I work in a feminist genderqueer group, and what that means is that they're just like, not an emphasis on your, like, your biological, your determinism, like your gender, your sex, all of these things sort of become in flux in a way, and that they're not Yeah, you know, and it's just like if we think about ways that, just I guess a question, think about ways that actually this room would propose models for organizing, you know, like the way that artists' ideas about our bodies and about identity could actually like shift a like an international crisis and catastrophe, you know, just global capital. It's interesting then to sort of, maybe it's a utopic question or proposition, but to actually like relocate that in a transformed body, like in one that is actually in flux, like with our ideas about our identities, like constantly shifting, and our alignments and our desires and our needs and our goals sort of moving along with well, I guess together, but does anybody ask him to talk? I'm just gonna keep.
I guess that the, because utopia is such a hot topic of late, I just think I like to make sort of the distinction, particularly since we're talking about building up practices and visions for things that we want to see built and want to work towards, that that's somehow distinct from a notion of a utopia that, like utopia in the pure sense of something that is unrealizable and gains its productive, it's like productive spaces that you can't make it happen. I mean, people sort of treat this in different ways, but without necessarily, it's one of those words, I guess, that I would be reluctant to use just because it means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. And if, and the way, I don't know if the way that I mean it is the way that someone else means it. So what I mean when I think about this imperative, it's for keeping both a struggle against something that isn't working running parallel to this really open creative process of developing something that we want. That to me is somehow distinct from a vision of a possibility that isn't realizable, you know, sort of says, well, we don't need that. Because that's kind of pleasure for the sake of pleasure, which is pleasure's limitation, I mean, in a way. I mean, that's the limitation of pleasure. If that's all you want, then it has to hit a wall. But if you're using it in service of something larger, then it's kind of got this productive capacity that's sort of inexhaustible. And that's what came up from basically everybody kind of pulling from their own organizing experiences. So anyway, it's just, I guess, back to Ashley's thing about language too. It's like, you know, just a personal desire to work towards building up words whose meanings we're very clear about, and that are developed from a place of like action and compassion. So.
Just to respond to that, I think you make a very good point. I think what Jameson is doing in this article in the New Left Review is trying to reframe not utopias, but the utopian imaginary as an empowering, as a central part of achieving political subjectivity. So it's not about imagining things that can't ever happen, but that the imagining as such is an achievement, and that and it sort of, to me, sort of parallels the theories of Giorgio Agamben, talking about thought and intellectuality being the central the kernel of subjectivity. So questions about achieving political subjectivity, even though one's community or individuals may be in a state of extremity, like, say, incarcerated people. That yes, they need to be free, but also there needs to be this, you know, not recognition, that's not the right word, but sort of this moment of valuing of thought and intellectuality, or the possibility of imagining being, I guess, more fundamental than the things that we think about as fundamental. So, but I agree with you, utopia is a really problematic word.
Yeah, I'm on the other end. I just, from another context where I come from, and I mean, there's a lot of, it's very loaded, but when I was working in the church-based community, so we're gonna talk about God, watch out. religion, but I mean, when we're working in the church, in the church-based communities, we're talking about building a utopia, and at that time was building the kingdom of God. Now, I mean, that's incredibly loaded. But when you look at what people do with it, so from another perspective, I mean, Henri Lefebvre, I think, used to say, we need to fight for what's impossible so we can achieve what's possible. So in that context, again, I have a problem with not wanting to talk about utopias. I mean, utopia is something that you walk towards, and it's imagination, and it's creative. So why can't we have utopias? So I mean, maybe it's too limiting, but maybe it's limiting in the way we're talking about. But when I look at the practice that follows that, I have no problems with it.